From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is supposed to be made for all of us, but increasingly it looks like it's only for some of us. When we talk about energy efficiency, our low-income communities being left behind, our vulnerable communities included. Well, last year, Governor Andrew Cuomo announced a new energy efficiency standard for New York State. The Public Service Commission set out to engage with representatives from many diverse communities, and early on, it seemed like everyone was pretty happy with the progress they were making. They received 44 detailed recommendations, but now comes the scathing report card from the Alliance for a Green Economy, which writes today, quote, "The Public Service Commission failed to turn this input into effective policy. Repeatedly, the Public Service Commission has failed to use the time and expertise offered by energy efficiency and renewable energy stakeholders and residents who have direct knowledge about the needs of poor and working-class communities. These dead-end engagement processes drain communities of their time and energy without leading to actionable results. This must change," end quote. So how can it change? This hour, a conversation about making sure these policies are accessible and affordable for everyone, including New York State's most vulnerable communities. And we're going to talk about some of these. I'm looking down a report card that no parent would want their child to have, but that's the publication from the Alliance for a Green Economy, and their executive director is Jessica Azulay, who's with us in studio. Jessica, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Clark Gocker is here, a director of policy and strategy for Push Buffalo. Clark, welcome to you.
Great. Thanks, Evan.
Ryan Puckett is here, a building analyst for Wise Home Energy. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan.
Different stakeholders from different communities. I want you all to explain to our listeners a little bit about where you've come from today and what you do. So, Jessica, the Alliance for a Green Economy, you came to us from Syracuse today. I'm sorry, from Buffalo. No, from Syracuse. Is that
yes,
right?
Okay. From Syracuse.
There's Syracuse, Rochester, and Buffalo represented. Tell us about what the Alliance for a Green Economy was formed to do.
Sure. So we are an organization working across New York to change New York State's energy policy to get us to a 100% renewable energy system in all sectors as quickly as possible. And we want to see this transition happen in a way that's just and equitable for everyone in New York. And we are a member of the Energy Democracy Alliance, which is a coalition of 25 organizations across New York. We are working together to change New York state policy and really focused on the equitable piece. And it's actually the Energy Democracy Alliance that put out this report card today.
All right, very good. Clark Gocker is Director of Policy and Strategy for Push Buffalo, which is what, Clark?
Yeah, so PUSH stands for People United for Sustainable Housing. We're about a 15-year-old member-based grassroots community organization on the west side of Buffalo. And our mission is to improve the quality and affordability of housing in our city while also tackling the climate crisis and environmental injustice issues in our neighborhoods.
Okay, and Ryan Puckett, a building analyst for Wise Home Energy here in Rochester. And tell us about the work that you do.
Yeah, so I'm a building analyst. We work under NYSERDA's programs for LMI, energy efficiency in residential single-family to four-family homes here in Rochester and Monroe County. I've been with the company for 6 years and have seen firsthand the different programs that are available to different communities and economies in this area.
All right. So this is a really rough report card that is out now that the New York Energy Democracy Alliance has put out here. And so, Jessica, I'll start with you. I'll ask all of you. I mean, we could hit individual parts of the report card, but the underlying concern is what? What is the impact of the failure as you see it? And what are your biggest concerns about what you're seeing at the state level?
So our underlying concern is that New York is undergoing a transition to renewable energy, and energy efficiency is a huge piece of the puzzle in that transition. It is the cheapest way to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, and it also has, in a lot of ways, can have the biggest quality of life impact for people who can take advantage of energy efficiency upgrades to their living situation. And so, you know, we think that the state needs to get this energy efficiency policy right. And part of getting it right means making sure that every person in New York, every household in New York, can take advantage of all the benefits that energy efficiency can bring. And so, you know, we have engaged the state in this proceeding and asked them to come to our communities and make sure they're listening to community groups that work with low-income households, to contractors that work with low-income households, to low-income people themselves about what programs would work for them. And what we've seen is, you know, some really great recommendations that rose up across the state, that were echoed across the state, and just no real near-term action on it. And unfortunately, we've seen this pattern before. You know, this report card, scathing as it is, didn't come from nowhere. We've been engaged with the Public Service Commission over a number of years, not just on energy efficiency, but on renewable energy, and really advocating for the inclusion of low-income communities. And we hear that they're interested in it and that they want to do it, and they often engage us in a process. But in the end, a lot of the programs that get recommended that we think would really change people's lives get kicked down the road and never implemented.
Give me one specific example. What comes to mind?
So, you know, one of the things around energy efficiency that we're really calling for is robust funding. We want to make sure that we have adequate funding that will meet the needs of people in the homes that they have. And we just see time and time again that these programs are underfunded, and we don't see a promise for a real massive increase in funding here.
Okay. And we're talking funding at the state level?
Yes.
I assume. Okay. And funding what kind of initiative or project that's going to help everyone or people in all sort of communities?
So I'll pass the mic on to one of my colleagues here.
Yeah, Clark, you want to grab that? Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. And actually, before I jump into that, just, you know, there's a pretty striking statistic that I'll kind of share with your listeners here that I think indicates the situation that we find ourselves in now. So over the last 12 years, only 12% of eligible low to moderate income households in the state have been able to access the benefits of energy efficiency. And if we continue at that rate, it'll take 100 years for all low to moderate income households in New York to be served. And that's far too long to, counter the kinds of ecological and environmental and climate crises that our state and our world, you know, face currently. So I think that's, you know, underlies a lot of the sense of urgency and priority that we've given to this issue. Now, in terms of specific programs, Push Buffalo has been actively involved in the energy efficiency sector since 2009. As I mentioned, we're a member-based organization. We joined a coalition of groups in 2009 that successfully advocated for the state's first equitable energy efficiency policy. It was called Green Jobs, Green New York, and it moved $112 million of public money to support a revolving loan fund for low to moderate income communities to do energy efficiency retrofit work. It provided financial support to community-based organizations to do outreach and education of folks in their communities in culturally competent ways, and, you know, using language and terminology that was familiar to folks in our neighborhoods. And Push has been really proud of that work. And we've made, you know, some incremental differences in the lives of our kind of friends and neighbors in Buffalo. We've been able to retrofit over 500 homes since 2012 with that support. We've built partnerships with contractors in our area, not unlike Wise Home Energy here in Rochester, to create viable pipelines into green jobs for members of our community. And so we I think, bring with our advocacy a lot of grounding and a lot of deep local knowledge about what works and what doesn't. And so in addition to, I think, the funding that Jessica mentioned, I think it's really key that community-based marketing, outreach, education continues to be supported by the state in the ways that it has been. And I think with increased funding, we'd see an expansion of those kinds of services. And I think our fear with the kind of current state of play with energy efficiency and the direction the state's moving in is that they'll begin to hand more of those responsibilities off to investor-owned utilities, who historically we know don't have the best interests of our communities in mind. And so that's really worrisome. And so that, I think, brings extra scrutiny to these issues, looking at the role that the investor-owned utilities play.
And Clark, when you talk about retrofitting 500-plus homes just on your part of Buffalo since 2012, when we talk about retrofitting, what's the kind of work that's actually happening? For those of us who haven't had a home retrofitted, what's going on when you do that?
Yeah, I can, you know, kind of introduce that and maybe kick it over to Ryan here. But yeah, retrofitting involves, for us, you know, comprehensive improvements to a home, an existing home, that could include things like insulation, air sealing, new mechanical systems in the home that are more energy efficient. And ideally, as the technology is commercialized and costs come down, you know, we'd like to see that heat pump technology, whether it's ground source, air source heat pumps, which is a renewable form of heating technology, to see inroads in bringing those kinds of features into folks' homes. Yeah. So, yeah, I'll maybe kick it over to Ryan.
Yeah, go ahead, Ryan. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that, too?
Yeah, well, first I'd like to just say thank you, Push and Clark. There's a concrete example of the work that you did with the Green Jobs, Green New York Act is I have a job in this field. That act essentially pays for my employment here and the work that I can do through Wise Home Energy in retrofitting homes.
So when we talk about what green jobs are, you put your hand up and say, it's me.
Yep, I'm a green collar worker, mm-hmm. And I'm proud to be one. So for the state incentivizes energy audits, and I'm sure people have heard of those before.
Sure.
At Wise Home Energy, we like to call them home performance assessments because we go deeper into just the energy efficiency of the home, and we look at things like health and safety in a home, indoor air quality, and different aspects like that that can really help change a person's life or a household's life. But the only incentives that we see really are for energy efficiency improvements. And I do advocate for that. It's a great thing. We do full assessments on the home, look for insulation levels, look for air tightness in the home, efficiencies of appliances, like Clark was saying, and then recommend improvements. And there are subsidies available to low to moderate income households that can cover some of those measures, but often there are gaps left in what really should take place in that home. So that's why I'm here. I'm trying to advocate for better policy making with the LIFE forum that's going on right now, where the PSC and NYSERDA is actually here listening to different organizations with their recommendations. We've seen in the past, as I've read on this report card, and the implementation of those policy recommendations hasn't really been there.
So let me just, for our listeners, kind of rip through each individual grade. And then I want to ask our guests why they think the state hasn't acted either as swiftly or at all in certain areas. Because last month on this program, earlier this month on this program, Governor Andrew Cuomo told us, you know, we were talking about a wide range of issues, but we talked a little bit about the green economy. We talked about climate action plans. And he was saying that, look, if you don't like New York State's climate action, then you don't like any states. Ours is the most aggressive in the country. And I said, you're right. And you're right. There's a number of people who still feel like it's falling short. It doesn't affect everybody. It's not aggressive enough. And he said, well, then you don't like anything because, you know, we're doing more than any other state. He was very, very keen to defend what New York State has done, broadly speaking, regarding climate, regarding energy efficiency. And I can't speak for the PSC, but they might say, look, this is a process. We're still listening. We're taking time. So here are some of the grades. On study habits, B minus. On follow through, C minus. On use of community resources, F. On listening comprehension, D. On, which is just trolling. I mean, that's an amazing grade. On fairness, D minus. Time management, D minus. Common sense, F. And the overall Public Service Commission grade on what they're doing here is a D. So I'm looking at a really tough energy efficiency report card from the New York Energy Democracy Alliance. But Jessica, the governor is defensive of it. The PSC says they're still, give us time here. What do you say to that?
So I say that New York has been engaged in this reforming the energy vision process since 2014, which is a process that kicked off with a lot of promises about how we were going to change our utility regulations and our clean energy programs. Customers were going to have more control over their bills. We were going to meet our climate goals faster, bring down costs, et cetera. And we just haven't seen the impact of that process on for most people. And particularly, we haven't seen policies that specifically break through the barriers, the higher barriers that are faced by New York's most vulnerable household. So, you know, I understand and I hear them when they say, look, we're setting these great goals. These goals are better than a lot of other states. And what I would say is, great, let's set great goals, but we also have to really think about how we're going to meet them. Implementation really matters, and near-term progress matters, and the way that these policies impact people's lives or don't impact people's lives really matters. This transition of our energy system, it's really big. Energy touches almost every aspect of our lives, and we can't think that we're just going to blink and easily just make this available for everyone, right? It takes real policies. It takes really listening to people on the ground. It takes getting creative. It takes working with community groups that have been doing the work for years and decades, building relationships with their communities and hearing from people. And so we need really game-changing action from the commission and from the governor to get real on the ground here. And engage with us in a really creative way about how we're going to meet these challenges.
Clark?
Yeah, so I would definitely agree with all of that. You know, PUSH and our members have been on the front lines of this struggle since 2014, looking at the Reforming the Energy Vision process and well before, you know, going back to the Green Jobs, Green New York advocacy we did. And then, you know, we've also been kind of in the trenches with our investor-owned utilities in Buffalo. So we've as rate cases open up, in which utilities often seize on the opportunity to raise rates on customers, it has disproportionate impacts on low income customers. You know, we've mobilized our members and done kind of education together as a community to understand how to contest those rate hikes. And that's really one of the kind of leading frontiers in which these new regulations and policies get played out. And communities like ours are consistently at a structural disadvantage. We show up in those spaces as parties, and often we're outgunned by attorneys who are employed by those investor-owned utilities on ratepayers' dime. And so I think, you know, part of this report card really speaks to, the accountability that we haven't seen as a result of those kind of structural inequities. I think, I'd just like to toss out another kind of concrete example. I think maybe helpful to just kind of keep, your listeners grounded in some of the issues, and to kind of, I think, suggest, how we haven't seen the kind of progress that is needed in this state. So, going back to Green Jobs, Green New York, one of the interventions that we sought to make there was to introduce a form of financing that was truly accessible to working families in this state. It was called on-bill financing, which exists to this day. If you work with a company like Ryan's and you get a home energy assessment and that's proven to be cost-effective and you decide to implement those measures that are recommended, you can have the repayment charges tacked on to your utility bill and just kind of make those payments over time using the energy savings that you're realizing through the energy efficiency work. Now, the problem with on-bill finance in New York that came through the Green Jobs, Green New York Act was that it relied on conventional underwriting standards. So like FICO score, debt-to-income ratio, things that historically have been barriers to working families as they sought to access capital in this country, whether it be home mortgages or other forms of consumer finance. And so recently, as actually going back to 2017, in another Public Service Commission proceeding, we advanced recommendations. Many of the same groups, the Energy Democracy Alliance and some other allies across the state, advanced recommendations for what's called inclusive finance, which is a form of on-bill repayment and financing that is kind of thrust on the utilities to be responsible for. And what it really means for utility customers is that they can realize the benefits of energy efficiency as a simple service of their participation as a customer in a utility. So if you get electricity, you get gas service from a utility, it's their responsibility to offer you energy efficiency as a service. And again, on your bill, you would be paying back the cost of any improvements that are made to your home using your savings. It's a pretty a simple approach, and it's proven. It's been proven in other jurisdictions across this country. We've had experts here in New York State testify to its success, that there's, again, turnkey models that could be plugged right into New York's existing regulatory infrastructure. And since 2017, when that recommendation was made and was actually accepted in a report
as part of the Clean Energy Advisory Council process that the Public Service Commission stewarded, that has failed to be implemented. And that was something last fall when the Energy Efficiency Forum series kicked off across the state, again led by the PSC and NYSERDA, we brought attention to and included as one of our demands. We want to see inclusive finance in New York. And we pointed back to those same models that we pointed to in 2017. And here we are in May 2019, and the state largely remains agnostic or silent on the implementation of inclusive finance.
But why? What's the reason they tend to give you for that?
That's a good question. You know, I think that's a question we'll be bringing into this stakeholder session this afternoon at the NYSERDA Life Conference. And some of it, I think, gets back to those structural inequities. You know, the utilities are powerful players in this landscape. They are driven by, return on investment demands of their investors, and often, you know, have the kind of the inside track to influencing regulators in New York. And so I have a hunch that, you know, a program like inclusive finance would create some risk that the utilities might have to countenance, and would create some administrative burdens that they might see as somehow going against the return on investment interest that they have as monopoly corporations. And so, I would point the finger at the utilities.
All right. Well, let me just read an email from a listener named Tim. And listeners, I'll tell you if you want to share either your thoughts, not only on the report card, but the question on whether for you, energy efficiency at home, is it accessible? Is it affordable? Do you feel like it's within reach? 844-295-TALK. It's toll free. 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. Tim emails to say, Evan, I always appreciate when you talk energy efficiency, particularly as it relates to the home. And you've talked heating pumps in the past, but every time you talk about it, there are restrictions. Sometimes you can't do it in cities. You can't do it in certain yard spaces. You need X, Y, and Z, and it's always more expensive. And your guests seem to think that New York State can put a heating pump in every home. Doesn't sound affordable to me. Is Tim onto something, or is he missing something there?
Well, I think Tim is possibly talking about ground source heat pumps or geothermal, which he's right. You are not going to be able to put it into a lot of cities. They're big projects. They're expensive projects. There is funding available for those. But what he might be missing is an air-to-air source heat pump, which the technology has come a long way. And just getting back to the policy that NYSERDA implements and the lag time it has to try to keep up with the technology, right now there is a subsidy of 50% for someone that wants to replace their oil furnace with a propane furnace. We had a client that recently did this with another contractor, and she ended up paying more money on her utility bills based off of the cost of each fuel and the heat output by changing from a 70% efficient oil furnace to a 96% efficient propane furnace. It sounds like a great deal, but she actually is paying more.
Why?
Because of the embodied energy in the fuel itself. So if you look, I don't know the actual figures, but the cost of oil is $2.20. The cost of propane is $1.70, but the actual heat output is more for oil than propane.
Okay.
If she was to have installed a heat pump, an air-to-air source heat pump, she would have been saving money and also would have had an appliance that's going to last her 15 years that can be run off of renewable energy. Now she has a propane furnace that she's going to keep for 15 years at least, and is going to be burning fossil fuels. So just recently, this air-to-air source heat pump for low to moderate income families subsidy has come on board. And it can be paired with another subsidy that anybody can take advantage of right now if they want to convert their home off of fossil fuels to an all-electric heating and cooling source.
Isn't some of this educating people on what is available? Because if you're not going to have a system where the state literally kind of goes neighborhood to neighborhood saying, well, we're doing it, we're installing this, if you want to set it up where there's either different financing, different subsidies available, you have to have people understand what is out there. And I'm not sure that's always happening. Is that fair?
There are contractors that have no idea what's going on with these types of things. There's a local CBO, Pathstone, does great outreach and tries to get communities and people involved and facilitate all of these different programs that are available that people can take advantage of. I'm a contractor that's been doing this for 6 years. I don't know all of the programs that are out there and how to coordinate them to really get that household the best benefit that they can have. There's a Renewable Homes Rochester campaign, I believe, out right now, which is really geared towards promoting air-to-air and geothermal heat pumps. I've been a few of the sessions. It's not taking off as fast as it should. There's not as much education out there as there should be. And a lot of, like, right now, contractors all over are saying, you know, get ready for summer, put in air conditioner. That appliance is a big expense for most households, especially low-income households. And it's going to last them 15 years. If they were to instead take advantage of some of these subsidies that are available, that really this just happened within the past month, to put in a heat pump, then they can offset a lot of their fossil fuel use in the home and reduce their usage for heating and cooling. So it's happening quick, and I think NYSERDA and the PSC and the powers that be to promote and educate people are not keeping pace with what needs to happen, especially if we're going to try to make the changes needed to make New York State a renewable state.
All right. In a moment, we're going to bring in Tanya Noel Stevens, who's an affordable energy advocate here in Rochester, and we're going to get our only break of the hour. We'll come right back and continue working our way through this report card that, again, if the Public Service Commission in New York State were your child, you would not be thrilled to see, well, one B minus and then a C minus and then an F, a D minus, a D minus, and an F and a D. Rough grades from the New York Energy Democracy Alliance as they look at what it would take to make energy efficiency available to everybody, not just select or wealthy communities. So let's get that break and come right back here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the College of Collectible Knowledge returns to Connections. Once a year, we sit down with some remarkably knowledgeable experts in the fields of antiques, the kinds of things that maybe you've been holding on to in your family, or you're digging out of your attic or your basement or your garage. Well, the WXXI annual appraisal event is almost upon us. We get a preview next hour, and we're going to answer your question on the value of antiques. Call us. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We're talking to Jessica Agelet, Executive Director of the Alliance for a Green Economy, Clark Gocker, Director of Policy and Strategy for Push Buffalo, and Ryan Puckett, a Building Analyst for Wise Home Energy. Syracuse, Buffalo, Rochester, all represented in studio as we have a conversation about what New York State is doing to make energy efficiency available and accessible to all communities, especially vulnerable communities. And as I look at the new report card, one of the two F's is in common sense. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to read a little bit of that because I want to hear from our guests on this specifically. You're right for the F under common sense. Despite utilities having a terrible track record in serving poor and working class communities, the Public Service Commission wants to give them greater responsibility for designing and implementing programs for low-income households instead of relying on trusted and experienced community groups and advocacy organizations. Predictably, the utilities largely ignored the recommendations from our communities in their first proposal for energy efficiency programs submitted in March 2019. And provided almost no detail for how they will meet our community's needs, end quote. Again, I don't have a utility here. They'd probably say that's a little too harsh here. But let's ask our guests to be very specific. When you say utilities have a terrible track record in serving poor and working class communities, why do you say that, Jessica?
So we say that because I guess for a number of reasons. First of all, the energy burden that low-income people face when just paying their electricity and heating bills is disproportionately high. And so what we're seeing across the state is continued unaffordability of energy supplied by monopoly corporations. And people are getting shut off. People are having to choose between basic needs. And, you know, while utilities continue to take money out of our communities and pay their shareholders. And so the whole setup of the utility model and how rates are set is already unfair for low-income
communities. That's sort of where I'm going. It sounds to me like you want to sort of blow up the model to begin with.
We definitely have issues with the model to begin with in terms of the extraction of resources out of our communities to national and sometimes international corporations that are not accountable to our communities and that are accountable to their shareholders and their investors. Beyond that, as we think about, you know, what you can do to reduce your energy bill and reduce your impact on the environment is energy efficiency, adopting renewable energy. There are ways that people can, with the right investments, save money and save energy. And we haven't seen those provided and really supported in a dramatic way by the utilities. And so, you know, they're not out there promoting this stuff. And so, and they kind of have an incentive not to promote it because of their business model. And so we just think it's kind of a common sense issue. Why would you turn to those entities that don't have that kind of grounding in our communities and whose entire business model currently doesn't work with this stuff? Why would you turn to them to design these programs and run them when we have community organizations on the ground that have been doing the work for years, that have been putting in the time with their communities and have really great ideas for how to implement and would like to design these programs?
Okay, Clark?
Yeah, not sure where to begin.
Big fan of utilities.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think some of it starts with the way the regulators in New York kind of police the behavior and actions of the utilities. And currently that's done so on the back of a model in which utilities are rewarded financially and oftentimes pretty handsomely for good things they may do. Whether it relates to the reliability of the services they provide, or with this kind of accelerated energy efficiency target that was established in December, could relate to progress they make in meeting those targets. What's missing from that kind of accountability framework are penalties, right? So if they don't meet goals, if they don't deliver community benefits as defined by communities that are directly impacted, they suffer no consequence. And so we think that just the very nature of accountability within the regulatory environment here in New York is flawed. And so I think we've even called for changes to that in the context of this PSC proceeding.
Okay. How do you feel about it?
I have very little to add to this topic, actually. I don't get too involved with the policy side of things, but I can say that at the Life Forum this morning, there was a slide where RG&E was proposing this is what we're looking at doing to try to direct policy in a way that's equitable for New York State, especially Rochester citizens. And again, I don't get into policy that often, but what I did see from what they are recommending to do and what they're looking to do, to me, didn't seem like enough or even close to something that we have currently. So why would we give it back to them?
Before I bring in another guest on the phone, let me just ask one other brief question here, because as we talk about energy efficiency in homes, as we talk about what access means for everybody, there's a justice component to this. And I think when, for example, the Green New Deal was rolled out, led by the Sunrise Movement, members of Congress like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, some of the criticism, and not just from congressional Republicans, from some Democrats as well, was that are we rolling too much into one? Do we need to include a lot of the justice ideas? Shouldn't we be targeting just the economy? It seems to me, Jessica, that if you're going to make an argument that it should have been all inclusive as it was, the Green New Deal, that this is why justice sort of rolls into it. That if there is a move towards climate action, but it is targeted and limited, it not only doesn't help people in all communities, but it probably isn't as efficient in fighting actual climate change. And I don't mean to be speaking for the movement, for the Sunrise, but I'm just sort of kind of observing the arguments you're making and saying, okay, if you're going to tie justice and climate together, this would be why. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they are tied together because our system is unjust. Our current energy system is unjust. People are unequitably burdened by our current system, both in terms of the cost and in terms of the pollution and the health impacts. it's already unjust. And so if we're talking about remaking the entire energy system, we don't want to remake it in the same unjust ways. We want to really think about how we can change the injustice of the current energy system. Also, climate change is a huge emergency, right? So we need every single household, we need every house to have access to energy efficiency, or we're not going to meet our goals. And we, you know, we can't do that without 40% of the population, which is low and moderate income in New York. So from both a practical perspective of meeting our climate goals, but also from just understanding the system that we're starting with, and knowing the system that we want to build, justice and these and attention to the most vulnerable communities has to be baked in from the beginning.
Okay. Clark, what do you say to the critics who said that Green New Deal proposals were too broad-ranging and sort of too all-encompassing?
Yeah, no, I would agree with Jessica. I mean, our economy is inherently extractive. The most powerful corporations in this country, in this world, are fossil fuel corporations. And so I think they've, you know, continuously demonstrated severe resistance to the kinds of changes that we've proposed. I think by incorporating justice, and really more than incorporating it, what we're talking about is centering justice, right? Which means climate policy in this state, in this country, that doesn't include justice is the wrong policy. Governor Cuomo this year in his State of the State address, you know, tried to, I think, claim something of the moral high ground around the Green New Deal kind of terminology, dubbed some policies that he introduced in that speech as New York's Green New Deal. Those of us at PUSH took issue with that. You know, we think that his policy proposal, didn't go far enough to, recommend the kinds of reinvestment in frontline environmental justice, low-income, working-class communities in this state. And that's, I think, often where justice begins. Our communities have paid their fair share into the system. The dollars that flow to NYSERDA that are administered by the Public Service Commission and the utilities, they come from all of us. We pay those as surcharges on our utility bills. And we've seen that the money in, money out equation has never worked out historically in the favor of frontline communities like those in on the west side of Buffalo that I work in.
Okay. Ryan Puckett, how do you feel about the kind of some of that criticism?
Yeah, so I've actually been working with students at the U of R and Pathstone for about a year now on a project where we're analyzing the current NYSERDA programs geared towards low to moderate income households in the city of Rochester and what populations and demographics of people are actually utilizing these programs. And we found that proportionately in the city of Rochester, at least this is what the preliminary outcomes are, proportionately people of color and minorities are not being enrolled into these energy efficiency programs at the same rate as low-income white people. And we don't have an answer for why that is, but it seems to just show that there is still that injustice, whether it's based off of economics or race, in these policy.
I want to bring in on the phone Tanya Noel Stevens, who is an affordable energy advocate. Thanks for taking the time, Tanya. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys today? Thanks
well,
for having me.
Good. We've had a sort of a broad-ranging discussion already, and I'm ready in a moment to sort through some more listener feedback via email, because a lot of personal experience to share or questions. How do you view this question, Tanya, from your perspective on how New York State and the PSC is doing in regards to making sure energy efficiency is available no matter your background, no matter where you live, no matter your income?
I think they're creating programs, and I think that's a great first step. But actually making sure those programs actually connect to the people that they're made for is completely different, because we've kind of already learned that trickle-down doesn't work. So if you're not actually putting those programs directly or putting those resources directly in the hands of the most affected and the most vulnerable people, then you're not actually doing anything. And we know that climate change has the most adverse effect on the most marginalized communities and the most vulnerable communities. So I think the report card kind of speaks for itself, but then also we know what the day-to-day lives of these folks are like. They're already rent burdened and then energy burdened on top of all of the other issues that they deal with, just being marginalized folks in America. So I think there's work to be done. I think it's a great first step. And I know that we're moving in the right direction when the governor or when folks start picking up language from the movement, but the language isn't enough. We really need to take action from the movement and what's happening like on the grassroots level and make that happen. That's the one of the new projects we're working with the Climate Coalition and the Tennis Union is Rush Rochester, where we're looking to actually create grassroots energy organizers to educate people in the community about programs that exist so we can advocate for better programs and really make things equitable and create real access to programs that exist and to programs that should exist to really change the lives of low-income folks in this state.
Yeah, Tanya, you make a really interesting observation that sometimes when you see these kind of public dialogues happening, you start to see political leaders, as you say, adopt the language of a movement, which is maybe the first signal that they are either agreeing or want to signal agreement or want to sort of gain favor in a group. It doesn't always signal that the policy and that the action is going to follow. What are you looking for next from either Governor Cuomo or state leadership on this?
Real change. I've been in Albany, I don't know, a lot in the last few months, really pushing to get these bills passed. CCPA and like good cause eviction, things like that. Like, I want to see the leaders in Albany actually do what the people who voted for them want, you know, what the people who are literally in the hallway screaming and are at all of these meetings and stuff like that saying we just want basic services, you know, like energy is just a human right. Like, people should be able to turn their lights on. People should not have to live in squalor. People shouldn't, you know, go broke just to warm their houses up or to have a house to live in. So we really just want them to provide the basics that any New Yorker would expect and for it to be adequate and sustainable because that's what building a better New York actually looks like, you know. It includes what 40% of folks that are like low income and marginalized, it includes really uplifting them. And so if we want to see our state look better, feel better, be better, like actually be energy efficient, we have to like listen to those people. And I know those people have been in Albany because I've been on buses with them. So it's really just like really looking at what the folks have been asking for. And I'm sorry, I can't name the specific legislation that's going through right now, but there is legislation that folks have been working on. So it's really getting senators to sign on and not just say like, oh, I'm like, not just being for it when they're in rooms with one another, but publicly being for these things, publicly putting their name on these bills and saying like, I stand with these tenants, I stand with these people, and I want to see better for them. So that's really what I like to see, like those folks taking action, because the community has been taking action. What we want to see is folks not just using our language, but taking on our same energy and urgency.
Let me get some listener feedback. Peter in Penn Yan writes to say, I can't agree more with the panelists' sentiments about utilities. We recently installed a diesel generator because our utility wanted an exorbitant fee to install three-phase. They are supposed to be helping modernize the grid, but in cases like ours, are actually driving people off of it. On the phone, this is Tom next on the phone. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi, Evan. It's Tom Alsaner. I just want to say I work with quite a few people here at St. Joseph's House of Hospitality who come to us because they have utility bills that they can't pay. And there's emergencies and all that type of thing. And I got to tell you, the bills, first of all, are very high. And the poor are getting hurt terribly, terribly. There's, you know, they get turned up in the winter. A lot of the people get turned up in the winter, and they may have medical problems. They may have all sorts of problems, and, you know, they get turned up. But it's surely, you know, the corporations are just draining our people, you know, and it's just not good for the city of Rochester.
Hmm. Tom, thank you for the phone call. Clark, that sounds similar to some of the complaints you've leveled earlier in the hour.
Yeah, and that really, I think, speaks to kind of how Push Buffalo got involved in energy democracy, climate justice work in the first place. So when the organization was founded, we canvassed the neighborhood. The west side of Buffalo, renters outnumber homeowners 3-1. Those renters are responsible for their utility accounts. Buffalo has some of the oldest housing stock in the country. It's one of the poorest cities in the country, one of the most racially segregated. All those factors compound to leave people in dire straits in terms of their household energy burdens. And we found, soon to be members of the organization paying, maybe three times as much for utility bills as rent payments. And this was, 2005, 2006. Those conditions have persisted. And it was at that time where we, challenged our investor-owned utility, National Fuel Gas in Buffalo, who was collecting ratepayer dollars ostensibly for a conservation incentive program, did research and learned that they were providing those incentives to affluent suburban customers in Erie County and leaving our members, our community members out in the cold, literally. And so we kind of turned the tables on that program through a lot of hard work and advocacy with the PSC.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Can I jump in? So Tom, I believe it was, probably was working through a program called Project HeartShare, and Wise Home Energy also took on a partnership in that program this year. So we do have people calling up for not being able to pay their utility bills and getting shut off notices and have exhausted all other resources. We took it on in part because we saw an opportunity for these majority low-income homeowners or even renters to try to engage them with some of the energy efficiency programs that are out there right now. And I'd say our success rate of converting them from just calling in to getting a payment made to actually getting out to the home and making it more energy efficient is fairly low. It's probably 20%. And I can understand that because, if you're struggling to try to make that bill payment and you're probably worried about, food for dinner or, other things, you don't have that time and you're not thinking long term in terms of making your house more energy efficient to try to reduce your bills over time. And then just the other part is that in Rochester, in the city of Rochester, most of the housing stock is for, in low income anyway, is rentals. And it's really hard to engage landlords to enroll in this program just because they don't want to take the time to do the paperwork. So those are barriers that we really need to overcome.
Two quick listener questions. Francis and Penfield called in to ask, why is new construction not required to be built at net zero? I do not have expertise on that. Ryan, any thoughts on that real briefly?
So new construction right now is, there are codes where you have to pass energy codes, and you have to make the home tight enough, which has really been a problem for builders, to make the house energy efficient. I would think and hope that we push those codes even further to make all new residential buildings, single family and multifamily, be net zero. But it takes time and money, I guess, is the only answer I have there.
All right, and other listeners just want to know what you want to see happen next. So maybe 20 seconds apiece. Tanya Noel Stevens, what do you want to see happen next as we talk about energy efficiency for everyone?
I would like to see the government do exactly what, I'm sorry, I don't know what your name is, just said, but like new buildings should be zero. That should just be the base. Like, we should start off making energy efficient homes the standard, and then it wouldn't even be a question. And then as far as like the New Deal, really pushing that, like the Green New Deal, like including reparations and all of that, because environmental justice is racial justice, is housing justice, all of these things intersect. So really highlighting those intersections and doing the work to like lift folks up, and it really changes everything.
Tanya, thanks for jumping on the line with us this hour and sharing your thoughts. I know it's been busy. Thank you very much.
No problem. You guys have a great day.
Jessica Agile from the Alliance for a Green Economy. What do you want to see next year?
So this report card that we issued is an interim report card. We're expecting a Public Service Commission order sometime this summer that would really be kind of the next step of implementation for the energy efficiency
process. It's like a student who gets a chance to rewrite the paper.
So we would really like to see them pull their grades up here. They have an opportunity. That's why we issued this interim report card. It's an attempt at accountability and letting them know what we think about how they're doing so far in the hopes that they will maybe go to summer school and pull those grades up.
And Clark, some final thoughts from you. What do you want to see happen next year? 20 seconds.
Yeah, real quick. You know, increase the amount of funding available for low and moderate income programs as a proportion of overall funding. We want to prioritize renewable heating system like heat pump technologies in place of fossil fuel technologies. We want to make sure that improvements made to people's homes are comprehensive, so addressing health and safety as well as energy efficiency. And really taking the contributions that our communities make to these processes seriously, and that our leaders at NYSERDA, at the Public Service Commission, are held personally accountable for a lack of action in these areas.
Clark, Jessica, Ryan, thank you all for taking the time to be here and explain some of this report card. And we'll come back. We'll talk about the update in the summer. Thank you all.
Thanks, you so much for having us.
Short break, more connections coming up.